Hey, this is Josh Schwartz from A Sound of Thunder, and you're listening to Focus on Metal. Focus on Metal!
Hey, Metalheads, welcome to yet another episode of Focus on Metal, and I am joined yet again in the studio by Richie. How are we doing, man?
I'm doing well.
Good, good. Keeping reasonably cool.
Trying to.
Yep. Yeah, I know. It's been brutal, but hey, so haven't seen you in a couple weeks. How's it going?
Good.
Good.
Busy home life.
Yeah. Baby, you'll do that.
Oh, fuck. Yeah, yeah, definitely. Still listen to a lot of metal.
Yeah.
So
good stuff coming out recently.
Yeah.
I mean, absolutely, right? I mean, well, first off, I mean, Satriani, great album.
I haven't got it yet.
Fantastic, good stuff. Actually, I pinged him on Twitter yesterday saying, you know, hey, it's the cure for road rage.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of those songs really chill you out.
Yeah.
And he binged right back and he said, ah, yes, no to rage, yes to shockwave. So, yeah, fantastic album. Very similar to the last one. Now, a couple, like, five tracks on it, or four tracks, were done from the band from Momentum.
Yeah.
And then the rest of it is with the current band for this one. And you can kind of, you know, tell the difference between the two of them, but just a really good album. Not really, you know, metal, but just a great overall, great guitar
album. It's not one of these instrumental albums that's just a little bit too long, is it? I know Joe mixes it up a little so it doesn't all sound
the same. This one is kind of, there's definitely a good mix, and when it's done you're like, is that it? Damn. So yeah. Just a really good album. The new one from Gus G, fantastic. It's got a nice instrumental at the beginning of it, shreds like crazy, and then after that it's all songs. Really good. One track on there with Elise Ride, and you know, she's with Amaranth, and she's also been doing stuff with Timo Tolkki, and fantastic singer. She does one song on there, really good stuff. And of course Tremonti,
yeah,
Cauterized album.
I love
another
it.
Great one.
Love it.
Yeah, really good album.
And they're going to be on tour soon with Trivium over here in the States.
Yeah,
so I'm hoping to go to that show and see him play.
So that's, yeah. So, I mean, definitely been a good summer. Like, all of a sudden, the last couple of weeks, just a flood of really good stuff, you know?
Yeah, but that's the problem. There's too much of it. It's how do you get the one to stand out for you to actually go and buy? Because there's so much music out there. It's getting the money out of the wallet for your band.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
To pick it out. It's tough because, you had Armored Saint there a little while back. That's a great album as well. You had a ton of great albums.
Yeah, yeah, and, you know, and also, you know, on this episode, I'm going to be talking once again to A Sound of Thunder, you know, speaking about getting your wallet out and, mm-hmm. You know, for great music. And, they're, you know, they've got the Kickstarter campaign going on, so Josh and Jesse and Chris will be on this episode talking all about the Shadow Man, Tales from the Dead Side. So you know, there you go. It's another place for your metal dollar to go. And you know, I've gotten some sneak preview, fantastic stuff. So good interview with those guys.
Yeah, you got to give me some of their stuff. I'm not really familiar with them at all.
Well, they've got, was it and it was funny, I brought it up on the interview. I said, one of the things I really like on your merch store, it doesn't work for me because I've got pretty much everything, but they've got what they call their like starter pack. It's literally everything they've put out in one bundle.
Nice.
And it's like dirt cheap. And I was even saying, yeah, you've got this one single on there. I don't even have that damn single, but I'd have to buy the bundle to get that single. And they said that's the most popular thing that they've had, which is great, which tells me that people are discovering them now late in the game for them and going back and going, I got to get everything else.
How many albums have they?
So it's, let's see, there was the EP. They had what is it called? Like Metal Allegiance or Metal Alliance, that one there. And
you fat, bloated idiot.
Yep, I'm an idiot. Metal Renaissance, that's the name of the album. I don't know how the hell I could forget that. And then Out of the Darkness and Time Zero and Lesser for Solomon. And then now there'll be the Tales of the Dead from the Dead Side.
So, okay.
Yeah.
Weren't you telling me the last time you talked to him that they'd already had most of this album already written?
Yeah. Yeah. So they're on a roll. And we talk a lot about that in the interview as well. I think it's really great that people get it from them as well, so they don't, you know, if they look and see that the campaign's already fully funded and go, well, what the heck and stuff. Or even if they, you know, from the last one of hearing like that this one, they did a lot of this already. Like, well, gee, why do they need, you know, so they kind of explain it and it all makes sense. And they're really good about just, they're just rolling, you know, they're just really in a creative groove. And so, yeah, great interview I did with those guys.
Good, good. Yeah, I must borrow some of that stuff off.
Yeah, it's amazing stuff.
So, yeah.
Yeah, and for an independent band.
Okay.
Of course, you know, along with summer is, you know, all the festivals going on and all that. And I know I haven't really been following it, but definitely I've been seeing up on Twitter a couple times a day about Mayhem this and Kerry King that. And
yeah, the Rockstar drink or the energy drink Mayhem Festival is winding up around now.
Yeah.
And it hasn't been doing well by all accounts or as well as the previous ones have done. And of course, Kevin Lyman, who's the promoter, has come out and basically given out about the metal scene being, you know, full of bald, fat, old guys and that the bands won't take a step back to move the scene forward, that they're all greedy. And, of course, Kerry King has come out and said that the reason the festival didn't do as well is that the promoter waited a little bit too late to book the bands. Because when you look at the headliners, it's Slayer and King Diamond.
Yeah.
Now, they're playing around here in the Xfinity Center, which holds 20,000 people. Mm-hmm. Now, they're not going to... I don't think they're as high-profile a band to do the business in venues like that.
Yeah.
I don't know how you feel, but on previous festivals, they've had, I think, bigger bands, more modern bands, like bands that were out in the 90s and the 2000s. I think, like, probably Disturbed, probably headlined, and maybe Slipknot.
Yeah, right.
And now you've got King Diamond and Slayer, who, you know, great bands, but they're 80s metal bands. I think a lot of the younger folks are probably looking for a more modern band to headline that.
Yeah, I mean, I always think of like those bands headlining things like Ozfest and things like that, and then the up-and-comers on Ozfest being on those like secondary and tertiary stages But I always think of like Mayhem Fest and even the Warped Tour, even more so, of more of those up and coming bands.
Yeah.
You know, and having bands like Whitechapel and Between the Buried and Me and, you know, bands like that on there. I don't really ever think of like a Slayer or especially a King Diamond, you know, as good as they are. It just seems like an odd thing to me that they would be the headliners for that.
Because King Diamond played the Palladium here. And I think the Palladium probably holds about 1,000.
Mm.
And that was where he started. When he came back last year, that was the venue he played. And Slayer played the Palladium as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, they might go out with, I think they played with Gojira around here and they probably hold about 4,000 or 5,000. I don't even know how it did. But they had to go out with a band like that to sell 4,000 or 5,000.
Yeah,
and
they did go here down here in the Songhees.
Yeah,
too.
That's the one I'm talking about. But, and then you have the two of them going out into a 20,000 venue. Like, that's not going to work.
Yeah.
And I don't even know most of the bands that are on the undercard. I'm not saying they're bad. I just don't know them. But the first thing that always grabs you about a festival is who are the top bands that are playing?
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you, I guarantee you that a lot of metalheads will look at that and say, oh, Slayer. And they look at King Diamond and say, great. Yeah, but there should be someone above them. You know, I'm not, I know Metallica are a massive band, but I'm talking, who would I be talking about? A Judas Priest, for example. If there was a Judas Priest and a Slayer and a King Diamond, that's your headliner right there. Like, Slayer are a great live band. I'm sure King Diamond's great live, but I don't think they have the cachet as a headline act to fulfill places like that. But when...
Slayer's got... I mean, they've got hardcore fans. I just don't think they would have enough to... just for the Comcast. But then again, you know, when... last time that the Priest played Xfinity Center, they didn't sell it out. And that was with Priest and Whitesnake.
Oh, wow.
And it didn't sell out.
When was that now? 10 years ago?
That was the Angel? British Steel Tour.
Wow.
The anniversary tour, yeah. British Steel anniversary tour.
And then people knew they were playing the whole record front to back, and it still didn't sell out?
Still didn't sell out.
Wow, that's surprising. But I think a lot of this is good. The traveling festival thing, to me... How would I compare it? Look at Wacken.
Mm-hmm.
Savatage just played a show in Wacken, right? So Wacken is always held in the same place.
Yeah.
It has a shitload of bands. It has all these bands that the promoter will try and get just to play at Wacken.
Yeah.
So you had Savatage and TSO play a set last night, which you're probably not going to get anywhere else.
No, like they have a lot of bands like that. They go in and they just like the reform for the... You know, a few years ago, you know, like Tank did that.
Yeah.
Just there was the one show Tank did for the year. Boom, there it is.
Yeah.
Feet off the ground.
And the likes of Wacken will sell out before they even announce the bands because of the venue it's in, and they know the bill is going to be great.
But Wacken is, I mean, it's a culture. I mean, it's, you know, it's like the premier, you know, European metal festival, you know, and I think that's just, it's almost an entity unto itself.
Yeah, but touring festivals, in my opinion, they don't work because there's too many bands touring now. Where's the novelty in a
festival? Warped Tour does really well. It's not like a variety pack of bands. They know the audience, and I think they do really well on the Warped Tour. And those bands all pretty much get along, and it's a community. And
yeah, but how big a venue do they play?
They pull into like the Xfinity Center.
Do they?
Absolutely.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just sometimes think there's too many tours, and the bands all juggle themselves around on packages anyway. So you'll see Slayer in 6 months' time come around with someone else. Or if you look at Overkill will come around with someone else. And
yeah.
You know, like Slayer, I think, have played here 3 times in a year, all with various different bills.
Yeah.
So you have to have something that'll grab you, something that you're only going to see once, like the Savatage thing,
mm-hmm.
right? If they got Savatage on the Mayhem Festival and people knew that they were only going to play that and they'd travel around and play that and they were done. I'm not saying they'd headline it now, but...
Yeah, I don't think it would make a difference.
At all?
I don't think so.
Because of Savatage? Because of the name or...
No, I think it's because of how we in the U.S. look at stuff like that and how Europe looks at stuff like that.
Okay.
So it's... And what's even more messed up is that I'm sure there's people that traveled from the U.S. over to Wacken.
Well, I'm sure
to see, but I mean, you can see, right? I mean, Christ, I even get lazy about it. Like, parking sucks. I don't feel like going. You know what I mean? And I just think that there's not, how to put it? Europe never lost the connection to the music. You know what I mean?
No, yeah, I understand.
So that a band, like the bands that you liked in the 80s, you still absolutely love those bands, right? And I'm sure that all your friends back in Ireland are exactly the same freaking way.
Yep.
Right? It didn't matter whether or not they're still in Kerrang or not. You're like, those are good bands, right? You never turned your back on them.
No.
But you can see over here, as soon as like MTV switched videos, everybody forgot that, wait a minute, you guys were all raising your fist for like Bon Jovi 2 weeks ago. And now you like pretend you never even own the albums kind of a thing. But so it's like a different playing field entirely. I think that it used to be, you know, when I was growing up, it was that thing of, you know, you, whatever that band put out, you got it. You were. And so I think there's a lot of people that are my age that are still like that. You bring up a band, you know, like a Black Sabbath or a Judas Priest and people are like, oh yeah, yeah. You know, but I think the younger and more predominant festival going audience here quickly turns through bands and isn't like overall invested in them as a, you know, loyal fan type of thing. So I don't think that a lot of times a band coming out of nowhere or, you know, or back out of nowhere is going to make people go, oh man, I got to go freaking see that. You know,
is there a newer band out there that would have set that Mayhem Festival over the top? You see, I could say Avenged Sevenfold, but Avenged Sevenfold would be the mindset that, oh, we don't need the festival. We could go on our own and sell it.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is anybody that is kind of closer, better fit is probably going to say that.
Yeah. So I think this festival is more than likely it's going away.
Maybe.
Because if Kerry King is right and the guy's taking too long to book bands, like... They'll announce in the next couple of weeks who's headlining Wacken next year and Download already. Yeah. They already have these bands booked for next year.
Right.
And Andy Copping and Download is probably working on the band for 2017 already.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt it. You know? But I think that's the thing. You know, like the example here, right, would be look how well Rocklahoma did. It had...
Originally.
Yeah, originally, yeah. Right? I mean, that was the thing, is now you had people primarily more in our age group who still had some of that band loyalty culture,
mm-hmm.
go to one spot, and I think that that kind of that culture exists more in the Midwest than it does here on the East Coast or on the West Coast.
I'd agree.
You know, it's more that blue collar thing. So it was a perfect place to do it and look at the people they got back. And for some cases, that was kind of that, at least initially, a lot of those bands that were playing that first one, it was going to be we're going to play it as a one and done.
But you see, that's what I'm saying. Something like that, people thought it was going to be a one and done. It was mm-hmm. going to be an exclusive thing.
Right.
So a lot of people went, holy shit, I'm going to see all these bands on the bill. And then it done really well. And then the following year, I think they tried to do the same thing. And then the guy tried to mix it up by bringing in a lot more modern bands. And they kind of, half the people who, people who followed the modern bands, they kind of went, who are these older bands? And the people who followed the older bands were the same way.
But I'm not sure if the initial success of that was so much the, if I don't go now, I'll never see it. But I think that it was just kind of done right the first time, that they knew they had the right audience. They had the bands that had been going along for a while that probably would have drawn the crowd anyways. And they just kind of went the extra thing of, hey, you know, how about playing? And we'll do it. You know?
Yeah. But didn't they get some bands I hadn't played in a long time?
They did.
To play Rocklahoma.
They did.
Yeah. I can't remember which ones, but I know there were some pretty big ones that ended up just reforming and playing that show.
Yeah. And then some of them after that weren't,
we'll make a new album.
Can do this on a weekend type of thing. Mm.
Hello, Frontiers.
Yeah. Yeah. But I just think just festivals in general here in the U.S. I don't think we'll ever get to what you guys have in Europe. We'll never have a Wacken here. You know, I mean, Rocklahoma was going well. Like, you're right, it screwed it up. I don't know, are they still even doing Rock on the Bayou?
I'm not sure.
You know,
honestly, God, I'm not sure. So Metallica had a festival. They did it for 2 years, and then they did.
But I think that one there was, I think, so eclectic. I think it was an interesting concept. I think you're right. It was that's the word. It was too eclectic.
Yeah, yeah. So I think what the guys should do for Mayhem next year, put it on a boat and just cruise around, because that seems to be the way to go.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
40,000 tons of metal, or whatever it's called. 70,000 tons.
I'm glad that there's that one, and there's the motorboat cruise too, that Motorhead's doing. Yeah.
Yeah.
But and then the Kiss cruise also does really well.
I'd love to go on one of those.
You know, but I think that I have to give Kerry, kudos though for standing up and going, hey, fuck you.
Yeah.
You know?
The one thing about Kerry King, he'll give his opinion. If you don't like it, you don't like it.
Right.
He doesn't care. He's being honest.
Yeah.
Who do I agree with? I can see a little bit where Kevin is coming from, but I have to agree with Kerry.
Like, yeah.
If the guy waited too late to book the bands, don't start blaming the fans for not going to the show. You have to have a bill that wants people to go. And as good as Slayer and King Diamond are,
right.
I don't think they had the cachet band right at the very top to get the.
Well, I think a lot of it's just the promotion. There's very little promotion that was done, right? How much, like you pick up Plastic Rock, right? Or any of the ones that company puts out, and months ahead of time, the whole back of it's full of festival ads, right? So they're advertising the crap out of it. You can't miss the ads.
No.
You know, back cover is usually a giant-ass festival ad, right?
There's no magazines here.
And but, even if they had to do television, whatever it is, there's nothing.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to rely on the radio to give away tickets. I mean, half the stations have no clue who the bands are anyways.
Yeah, sure. But a lot of the bands that play the festival circuit, they're nostalgia acts, most of them.
Yeah.
Like, a few weeks ago, I went to see Def Leppard. And I didn't go. Tesla were supporting, and I didn't go because I'm not a Styx fan, and Styx were second on the bill. And I stuck my head around the corner and went, "Eh,
they're really good live."
I'm sure they are, I wasn't going to go early to see Tesla, who I saw last year, who I don't think are nowhere near as good as they used to be,
right?
And then sit through Styx, and if I didn't like them after 5 minutes, I'd have to sit there for an hour and a half anyway, until Def Leppard came on. But one of the funny things about that I found about the Leppard gig was they were fantastic. They were super.
You're going to say that anyways, though.
No, they really were super. And they played Promises from 99's Euphoria album.
Uh-huh.
And two girls next to me said, "Is this off the new record?" That's all you need to know about where America stands with a lot of these bands now, yeah. is if it's not released pre-1990, they have no idea what it, what the song is at all.
Yeah, yeah.
And I had to turn around and say, no, actually, the song's 15 years old.
And then they suddenly didn't like it anymore, right?
No, but I was, you know me, I was delighted they played it because they could have just played Pyromania and Hysteria back to front and they didn't.
Yeah.
And they threw something like that in, but it didn't, like, you could see that the lull in the crowd for that track was like, what the fucking song is this? And I was like, yes! But, you know, that's just me. That's the way the festivals go. You play the hits. But, yeah, the Rush show I went to as well was something else. Oh, playing 40-year anniversary and they start now and they work all the way back to the first record.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. The second half of the show, they opened with Tom Sawyer and went all the way back to the first album. And you had every 50-year-old or 40- to 50-year-old guy there. And he was like, oh! But I felt sorry. There was a guy next to me. And I put this on the Facebook page. And he brought his girlfriend or his wife.
Uh-huh.
And he was a huge Rush fan. And she just kept showing him her phone, some Facebook posts. And I felt like saying to him, you know, will you tell your wife to piss off? You know, this is Rush. And they're probably not going to tour anymore. And I was like, oh, thank God my wife hates that band. Because I was like, oh, if I had to bring her there, she probably would be doing the same thing. But,
I don't know. I mean, who would bring it? If who would bring someone to a Rush show if they're not a Rush fan?
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Exactly. Because the first thing a lot of people say about Rush, oh, I hate his voice.
Yeah.
Or how do you like them? Like 99% of people at Rush concerts are men anyway.
Right. But, and you're also going not for the show. You're going for the music.
Oh, yeah, definitely. For
you
them.
Know what I mean? And they're not jumping around and there's not, you know, all kinds of pyro and it's the music.
Yeah.
Know?
They have a great state. They have a great show. They poke fun at themselves with all the, you know, the clips. But, I hear where you're coming from. And it's like, I'd say some of them probably turned on, where's the support act? There is none. This is 3 hours of this band. But, so how do we get onto this?
I don't know. This is old school focus on metal right here. We wander down a rabbit hole and go, oh, shit, we at the bottom? All right, let's climb back out again.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Let's get into the interviews.
But I'm, like I said, you're right. It's I think that he probably should have done a better job and put together a better bill and got it out there early and all of that. I just think you're, like I said, though, I don't think that they put a lot into promotions. I mean, every year, right, they have the New England
metal
hardcore metal fest, right?
For the weekend.
And every year I offer them, like, you want to have somebody come on and talk? And every year I get nothing. No response. Not even a no thank you. I just get nothing.
Wow.
Like, what the hell is that?
That's not
nothing.
Right. Wow.
And, you know, you look and some of those bills, I mean, we've had half the bands on the show.
Yeah, definitely.
You know? But every year I email them and stuff. And
now you email the venue?
I email the promoter.
The promoter.
Yeah. And never get an email back. Never, just nothing. Black hole, nothing.
That's dumb.
And it's like what the hell? Like, we're in your backyard. But nothing.
Did it sell out?
I've got no idea.
Yeah, I've never gone to any of the shows. They normally have... they got a ton of bands, and normally the bands at the very top are, you look at the likes of Testament or Overkill or Anthrax, maybe. Pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
All right. So, anyways, like I said in the beginning, you know, our first guest this week is bringing back again Jesse and Chris and Josh from A Sound of Thunder. And they got their brand new album that they're working on, Kickstarter campaign. They funded this thing in 21 hours. So I had, you know, they announced it. And of course, I went right up. Like, I'm in. Boom. Done. Like, the minute I heard about it, I'm done. And then I posted and I said something about, hey, let's be uber metal and close this puppy in 24 hours. And then the next day, Josh texts me back and he's 21 hours.
Do they tour?
They do very limited touring.
It's the way it is now.
Yeah.
It's cost and probably they've all got lives and everything.
They do, but they did tour last winter. They were up through here and they tend to do like maybe do a West Coast tour or a Midwest tour or come up the East Coast kind of thing and do it that way. So they do limited touring. They'd love to tour more, but yeah, I mean, it is very, very expensive to tour. Sure. But you know, you gotta figure though, like, how much of a fan base do you have that you can launch a Kickstarter campaign and have it fully funded in less than 24 hours? That tells you something about this band and their fans. And I would almost say that if, you know, 20 years ago, if Kickstarter existed and the internet existed, that this is probably how Rush would have funded every single one of their albums. Yeah. And it would have been that same thing, right? That hardcore Rush fan would be like, oh, crap. They're going to do this new album called Hemispheres? I'm in. Boom. Done. You know what I mean? I think that's how these guys are, is that they're 100% independent. And it just blows my mind, though. In 21 hours, they already had met their goal. And I mean, that's amazing.
How much were they looking for? Did they say?
Yeah, they say it on there. I think it was, I don't remember what the number was, but when you have the project, they do say, hey, this is the goal. And as things come in, it tells you how close they are to it. You know, as an example, you know, Anvil has a project going on now on Pledge.
Yeah, I read that.
And they haven't reached their goal yet.
Okay.
And this is Anvil.
Where's the record company for a band like that?
You know, so, I mean, stuff like, you know, Slash is doing one on Fanbacked it's for a movie, but it's, you know, you got a name like Slash on there. And he still hasn't reached his goal yet. But you got this little band out of Alexandria, Virginia, and in 21 hours, done. They're funded. And now they're just, you know, and we talk about it in the interview so people can kind of understand. But, you know, as they get more money, they absolutely do more stuff. And you saw the quality of the stuff that they've always sent me.
Oh, yeah.
And they roll that money in the band. And a lot of times they'll go, oh, hey, you know what? Well, now we'll also do this and we'll also do this. And, you know, that's how, you know, a lot of the stuff that they do. So,
yeah, but you've shown me one of the things we talked about a while ago. I was a little bit wary about the Kickstarter thing. You've actually shown me that they do put the money back into the band. And if you actually get something from them, it's top quality. I've seen it.
Yeah.
They do fantastic stuff. Right. And once you buy the bundles and the packages, like you get, if you're a fan, you get everything you want.
And what Josh points out, and I never thought about it this way. So I thought about it again this morning. I'm brushing my teeth and I'm like, wow, you know, it just hit me all over again. And he says it and he's right. If you're going to buy the album anyways, just why not do it through Kickstarter? You'll end up getting more for your dollar contributing to Kickstarter. You're showing, you know, the band that you support them, but you end up actually getting more physical product for the same amount of money.
Yeah.
So why not? If you're going to get it anyways, why not do it that way?
Yeah, because normally what they'll send you tracks that might be in the works to start because you've pledged, and then you get the album, you might get posters and
offers
for all the other stuff.
Yeah, so it's like, you know, why not do that?
Yeah.
You know, and they've got, and this one's killer, but the stuff that they're doing, you know, they've got sets doing vinyl and they've got posters and CDs and, I mean, just t-shirts this time, different. It's a male t-shirt, a female t-shirt, and like just every time they're trying to up and make things better and try new things. And, I think it's amazing what they do.
That's great. They're into their craft.
Yeah.
And they realize how important the fans are, and they want to give them value for money. I'm all for that.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And what I was saying, I'm talking to him and I think Josh had mentioned it. He said about how Megadeth doing one. And I said, exactly. Yeah. I said, do you know, Josh, what $50 gets you? And he said, no. It gets you a signed CD.
Yeah.
That's what $50 gets you on that. $50 on them is like, a CD and a t-shirt and a poster disc and,
The new Megadeth album, $50 gets you a signed CD.
Yes.
With a new guitar player and Chris Adler from Lamb of God.
Yeah.
No, I actually joined the fan club the last time. I know we're rambling on here. I joined the fan club the last time. One of the reasons I did it was to get Super Collider signed.
Signed, yeah.
And I'm not doing it for this one. I'll buy the album. I love Megadeth. Uh-huh. I've loved them forever, but right. I'm not paying $50 for a signed CD.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. That's the difference, right? Yeah. Is that, and Josh, says it. He's like, yeah, I can't understand that, because he goes, we've never asked people to pay us for an autograph.
Yeah, how much is a signature worth? Really?
So he's like, because, he says, we're still at the thing of like, well, why would you want me to sign that anyways? But he's like, no, it's like, if you're a fan and you want us to sign it, and it's like, then we owe you that.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for being our fan. Sure, here you go.
Mm.
I think it really shows a difference in, it really shows just overall just the amazing attitude this band has. So, despite the fact that, they put out fantastic music, I just have a lot of admiration for this band as people and what they do.
Good.
So I hope it comes through in the interview as well.
Yeah, I'm going to get some stuff off and have a listen.
There you go. All right. So with that, unfortunately, Nina wasn't able to join us for the interview. She's always a character and always lends a whole other dimension whenever we get her involved. But I was able to get a hold of Jesse and Chris and Josh, and we had a great talk. And why don't we just roll that now?
Hey, metalheads, kick back, relax, raise the horns, and stay tuned for another original Focus on Metal, Metal Side Chat, with your host, Scott Thompson.
Hey, man, thank you for having us again.
Hey, no problem.
And I have been noticing that you've been retweeting and commenting on everything online. Thank you.
Oh, no problem. So, of course, first thing I want to say to you, Josh, is for all of us in the metal community, thanks so much for helping Raven out with getting that extermination campaign going and all that. I know you played a big part of making that happen. So for all of us Raven lunatics, I'd like to say a big thank you to you for doing that.
Oh, well, you're welcome. Everybody's welcome. I've been trying to talk those guys into doing one of those for a couple of years, and I would thank the Raven fans for making those guys realize that they never have to struggle to make an album, because their fans are going to back them up. So
absolutely.
Raven can make albums for as long as they want to.
Yeah. Very good. Very good. So, of course, you've got your brand new Kickstarter campaign going, and I'll say first thing about that is, holy crap, 21 hours. I think that's freaking amazing, right?
Did anybody get the number of that bus? that was crazy.
I thought when I posted the tweet about let's get this thing done in under 24 that it would just kind of be like, yeah, let's see what happens. But when you posted 21 hours, it was like, holy shit, that's absolutely amazing. And I think it's great that, you guys have just grassroots, independent, developed such an awesome fan base.
It's really cool. We're really, really lucky.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
It's gratifying, too, at this point, because now our fans are actually giving us better funding than if we were like a mid-tier band on Nuclear Blast or Century Media, because we run into those bands and we know what the advances are, and it's less than our fans are putting up to us to help us make our albums. So
right,
it's a really good way of doing things. It's great for the bands and the fans, and everybody's seen Megadeth's running one of these right now, so I think that's a pretty good sign of the times.
Right. Yeah, but of course, you compare what Megadeth is doing and what they offer in their campaign and the end results, and you compare what you guys are doing as an independent band, and it's night and day. I mean, not to blow smoke up your ass, but you guys are clearly blowing them away in that department, just with the sheer amount of stuff that you've got there and the quality of what you guys put out at the end.
Well, we can't step back, not make as good of a thing for our fans,
right?
Because you know, because they keep supporting us, and we've got to keep like it's a game of one upsmanship, I guess, that I'm not sure can end really well
with ourselves.
Yeah,
the bar can, you know, only go up; it can't go down.
Yeah,
I don't think it can even really stay the same. Maybe it could, but feels like it needs to go up still.
And well, it is amazing. I mean, every time you come out with another one, you know, you come out with the album first, and I think they can't possibly top this album. And you get to figure that the first time I talked to you, Josh, was back in May of 2012. And, you know, when that album came out, I thought, oh, you can't possibly beat that one. And it's just like, you know, the next two right after that just continue to up the game. And then with the campaigns, it's just been the same thing. So it's been neck and neck. So it isn't just that you're just putting out like a whole bunch of swag, but I mean, the music that's going along with it just keeps getting better and better. And you sent me the Tower of Souls track, and like within the first, you know, couple of seconds, I was just like, holy shit. I mean, first of all, the guitar tone you had at the beginning of it, I'm like, can this get any better? And then, of course, the vocals came in and I was all done.
All right. Just for you listeners of Focus on Metal, this is a little bit of a sample of a track off of the new Sound of Thunder album, Shadow Man, Tales from the Dead Side. A little sample of the track Tower of Souls.
Samidi, King of the Dead Side, struck a deal to confront the Shadow Man. While Sandra's brother prepared.
I think we all feel like we topped Lesser Key with this one.
Yeah.
I think everyone will agree. I think this is Chris. I think everyone will agree that, or at least Josh and Jesse will agree that the one thing about the Shadow Man is it was such a blur in his first part. Yeah. We were just coming off Lesser Key and we were already had been working on it for quite some time. And bang in the studio and bang, we're working really hard and so incredibly focused to get it done and make it sound right. And yes, we are indeed happy with the results.
Now, it's interesting too, because I know that with every album, you've had some type of a theme or a story behind there. And you don't, you know, you've never come straight out. You've left it to the listener to figure out the story and all that. And you've given a lot of clues and all that. This is the first one that I think that you've done that you clearly say, hey, this is what it's about. Now, did that change the dynamic in the writing at all? Or did it make it better or harder or what?
It definitely changed it. This one is definitely officially, it's a concept album. The album runs 10 songs. It's 1 hour and there's no breaks. So there's narration and soundscaping in between the songs and it runs seamlessly. So when you get the album, everybody will want to set it up to run with no gaps. And as far as the story, it was just, I mean, it was just inspiration. And if you've seen the Shadow Man comics, you know, they're dark, there's black magic, there's demons, there's the dead side, and yet it also takes place in New Orleans. It has this jazz and blues element. So just kind of, you know, read the story, look at the story beats, close your eyes, and imagine what, you know, evil in New Orleans sounds like.
Yeah. And I gotta say that the voiceover that was in the track Tower of Souls, definitely, it's not like this intrusive thing. Like if you were doing what you just said, of, you know, kick back, close your eyes, listen to it, it's just fits right in there. It isn't like all of a sudden you got this voice just sits on top of everything. It's right in there, and it's really well done.
That was, we got to give credit to Kevin on that. And there was multiple rounds of mixing to figure out how to get that in there. And I do want people to know that there's only two songs on the album that the narration is actually within the songs. Mm. The rest of it is in between the songs.
Okay. And I got to say that track, if there's one word for it, it's dense. Just the amount of work that you guys put into it. Just even with the vocals, with the, like the gang vocals and all that, it's just amazing the density of that song.
I mean, the album just took so many layers, and it just seemed to keep taking layers, and it's, you know, we just kept building it up. It never felt like too much. So it's a dense album.
Yeah.
It may not be the best album to listen to first if you've never heard A Sound of Thunder before. And I mean, you know our catalog, so this one, the most complicated song on the album is the first one. So it'd be like if Lesser Keys started with Elijah. Like you better have your head screwed on right for Prague and for some twists and turns.
Yeah.
But I think it will give more repeat listening value than any album we've ever done.
Yeah, and I do say too that listening to that track that you gave me, that I mean the rhythm section, I mean you guys just really kicked it out, and you can definitely hear a lot of that progginess in there. It sounds like you guys had an absolute blast doing it.
The Tower of Souls is so much fun to record, and it only gets better from there for the rest of the record. I mean this was easily the most fun record I think that we've done, at least as far as the recording process goes.
Yeah, that's not even one of the proggier ones, so Chris and Jesse really cut loose on some of the other ones even more. But yeah, there was definitely anytime there's like a section with drop beats or like something in a seven, that's where I kind of step back and let them do their thing.
Well, a lot of it also had to do with a lot of it came about in the studio. A lot of the quote unquote licks and passages, if you will. A lot of it came about in the studio as a result of, you know, sitting down with Kevin and discussing, hey, what would sound good? What do you think? And getting, you know, as far as the drums are concerned, and of course, you know, kind of putting down the drum track so everyone can play along with it. You know, that was kind of up to me. And I'll agree with Jesse. It was a lot of work, but it was actually fun in some ways. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely an amazing track. I'm really looking forward to hearing the rest of it. And I mean, you guys have never disappointed me, like ever, with anything you put out. So, and just again, it just continues to raise the bar and blow my mind, which is, again, it's amazing that you guys, as an independent band, the level of musicianship and quality that you guys have.
Thank you.
I think that, thank you very much. It's just kind of the story of the band. I think, you know, Chris probably agrees that when we started out, it wasn't to become famous or take over the world. It was just like, I think I didn't really have any like thoughts of playing around the country or outside of the country. And it was just, let's just make some music and see what we can do.
Josh literally played some of his guitar tracks for me in a parking lot. And that's basically the genesis of this band. And when I said, let's look a little further into this. So. Yeah,
but we didn't know if we were going to be any good. You know what I mean?
Not at all.
So it's just been kind of a constant challenge to ourselves to see what we can do.
Yeah, and there's definitely a big jump from that first album to Out of the Darkness, too. Just a kind of a huge step change sonically between those two. And I almost think that Out of the Darkness is kind of the modern era, the beginning of the modern era of A Sound of Thunder.
One!
I've started to refer to the first EP and Metal Renaissance as the Training Wheels records. You know, which it really was. I mean, I had never been in a real studio before, at least. And they were some of the first songs we'd ever written.
Nor had I, not to that extent. And it was definitely a learning experience.
I had.
Jesse had experience.
Yeah, he would have set us straight if he was there, but he came in halfway through Metal Renaissance. So we can't blame him for that one.
No. So, of course, you know, one of the things with the campaign is you guys are going to put out some great bonus tracks depending on the level that you get in there. And, you've announced the first one. And, of course, the guest I had on the show 2 weeks ago, Veronica Freeman, is guesting on that one, which is way cool for me. I have kind of the holy trinity of great American female vocalists, and it's Leather, Veronica, and Nina. So anytime any one of those two works together, or all three, is a big bonus day for me. So I'm really looking forward to the bonus tracks. I mean, everything else you guys have ever done, cover version, just always knocked it out of the park. So I think that's a really cool upgrade in the campaign.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to unleashing those on people. We actually almost had Leather on that version of Queen of Hell that had Veronica as a guest. So someday I hope we can get Nina, Veronica, and Leather on one track together. Yeah. Kind of do our own version of the Three Tremors.
Here we go. Because you know, with I was talking to the V about, you know, her album, and I'm like, okay, well, you had Leather on a track. It's like, no, Nina, what happened? Like, I was really looking forward to maybe that happening.
Well, she promised me next time. Yeah, Nina got the Benedictum track.
Yeah.
So I guess V got the solo, or Leather got the solo track. Did you catch our second bonus track announcement?
I did not.
It's
going to be the Deep Purple one?
No, it's...
Oh, the Rainbow one.
Yeah, it's Death Alley Driver, and we've got Tony Carey from Rainbow.
Nice.
And he added wall-to-wall organ to that sucker, and it sounds badass.
It's amazing. I mean...
just when we thought we had a handle on, like, putting some keyboards on albums from doing our own stuff in the studio, and we get his track, and it's like, that's a pro.
That's how you do it.
Yeah.
Great. Now you're not going to ever be able to keep Jesse controlled when it comes to keyboards. You've doomed yourself.
I think I might just hang up my keyboards forever after listening to what he did. So
cool. And, you know, and obviously I've been talking about this campaign on every show, and I want to make sure I get the word out as early as possible on it. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, just to talk to you guys about it is, obviously, you know, in 21 hours, you reach the goal. And a lot of people that maybe aren't familiar with Kickstarter, or in the way you guys operate in particular, you know, may go, well, geez, they've already reached their goal. And, you know, why should I donate more? And, you know, I try to express it as, you know, you guys do your stretch goals. You really put that money to good use and all that. And, you know, maybe it'd be good to just hear it coming from you guys.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, we try to keep the pricing so that you really get a better deal if you do the Kickstarter. Part of that is because we want to reward people for helping us out. We wouldn't exist without our fans doing these Kickstarters. So we're not going to punish people by charging them more. We're going to charge less on the Kickstarter. So get in early. And then also, you're just getting more stuff. These bonus tracks are going to go away at the end of the Kickstarter. They're just for our Kickstarter supporters. This time we have two full-color T-shirts that are only going to be for Kickstarter. And we've got a bunch of limited edition stuff, vinyl and posters and picture discs that you get first in line for.
Thunder Choir's back.
Yeah, the Thunder Choir's back. You can even sing on our next album. We've done that. That's kind of become a tradition, which is always a really fun day when we get the fans together to do background vocals on the albums. And then people are getting, behind the scenes video and updates from us through the Kickstarter. And the Kickstarter backers get their CDs mailed first when it comes time to release the album. So, you know, it's not a handout by any means. We give as much value as possible, and we're cutting the margins way, way closer than a record label would ever do.
Yeah, and you really do your homework, too. I mean, that last package for Lesser, I mean, going over to Europe and getting a lot of the stuff done over there and trying to, you know, keep the prices good. And I mean, you guys put a crap ton of work into making all of that work. And I don't think people realize just how much time and effort you guys do to making all this happen.
Yeah, I mean, that book is a great example because, I mean, we'll tell people, we're very transparent. We're fan-funded, so you guys are our board of directors. Those hardcover books cost us like $28 a piece to manufacture. and we're selling them for $40. So if we were a record label, that book would be like a $90 book probably.
Right. Yeah. And everyone I've ever shown that to, they're just blown away. Like, holy crap. Like, this isn't some major label band. I'm like, no, this is a band that did all of this by themselves. And people just absolutely cannot believe it. And I'm like, just wait for their next Kickstarter and get in on it. You guys won't be disappointed. I mean, it's great music and a great product. So
yeah, thank you, man. Thanks. As always. And yeah, I mean, I think we all take pride in showing people that we ain't fucking around.
No. I mean, the good example, right? So the pledge campaign for Megadeth, I mean, at the $50 level, you get a signed CD.
Right.
So that's it.
Just by way of example, just to kind of let you see the difference here, at the $12 mark on Sound of Thunder's Kickstarter campaign, you get yourself the CD with the free autograph, you know, nice CD, 6-panel full color digipack, 20-page full color booklet. It's got the full album lyrics, art, the whole thing as well, and also a download code for a free copy of Shadow Man number 1 comic book and the digital album and 2 digital bonus tracks. That's at the $12 level as opposed to the $50 level for Megadeth. You know, at the $45 level with Sound of Thunder, you get a villain t-shirt, either Master Dark or Sandria Dark, so, you know, men's shirt or woman's shirt, with some original paintings by Dusan Markovic. Guy is an incredible artist. Also, you get the whole A Better's Limited CD deal. So it's the CD, plus you're getting a patch and sticker and a pick. You get the digital album, get 4 digital bonus tracks. I mean, just a whole ton more stuff at that $45 option.
One thing we've drawn the line on is that we never charge for autographs.
Yeah.
People should be so lucky that anybody wants their autograph. You know what I mean?
It's like, who gives a shit about you? It's like, your fans give a shit about you. Let's not, you know, punish them for being interested in your product.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I look at what you guys are doing at that same level, and it doesn't even compare, you know, so it's just amazing. And of course, you know, I urge everybody to go up there and check out all the different levels. And I mean, just the vinyl alone, I mean, that blue vinyl is absolutely killer.
That jacket looks so cool in real life. Yeah. The pictures don't do it justice online. It's our first ever gatefold vinyl.
Yeah.
And it's just, I love the thing.
Yeah. I mean, just everything on it. You guys did so well with the concept and bringing it all together. And yeah, the first time I saw the vinyl, I'm like, you've got to be shitting me, really? And I was like, I had to look close up at the pictures, like, this is so freaking cool. You know, everyone, when they looked at the red vinyl, you know, for the last one, that they thought that was cool. But this is like, you know, again, it just, you guys keep raising the bar. I don't know what the heck kind of vinyl you're going to do next time, but.
Fuck.
Yeah.
Where do we go on it?
We're going to put the next album out on Wax Cylinder.
should we tell them we're already working on CD7?
Yeah. The next album, you just buy the sheet music and you have to play it yourself.
So you could tell me, like, you've got the next one done already right now. And after,
it's a funny thing you mentioned. Funny.
And after the last time you said it and I was surprised, like, I'm not surprised anymore. So.
Well, the next one, it actually is done and mastered.
And we're one track into the follow-up to the next one that's already been mostly recorded.
Yeah. Now, the next one is the covers album.
Yeah.
So basically, we're just going to wait for the dust to settle after Shadow Man, after Tim the Dead Side, and then we'll, you know, we're eager to unleash the covers too, because that was a full production in and of itself. People don't realize that we really, you know, we strapped ourselves with doing 3 albums in a row, because the Lesser Key album was not done when we did that Kickstarter. We still had about half of the work to do. We signed ourselves up to do so many covers with that Kickstarter that it turned into a complete covers album, which was just as much time and work as a regular album. And at the same time, we got the go-ahead from Valiant Entertainment to do the Shadow Man album, and we felt like we had to jump on that. So it was Lesser Key, Tales from the Dead Side, covers album in the studio nonstop for almost 2 years.
Yeah, this being generous, I think that, like, all 3 of those things happened mostly in an 18-month time frame.
Yeah, it was a lot of studio time.
That's a long time to be in the studio, that's for sure. And studios ain't cheap, so.
Yeah, well, like I said, there's no way that this would be possible without the fans backing us, you know, you included. So thank you.
I was happy I got in on day one on this one.
So. Yes, you did.
Totally.
It was like email, Kickstarter, on, done, announce. It was just like, that was it. It's you guys have definitely made that list of you know, back when I was growing up, Aerosmith put a new album out, I'd buy it blindly. AC/DC, you buy it blindly, you know. And you guys are that same thing. It's just like, oh, Sound of Thunder, it's got a new album. Yeah, I'm in. It's like, it's done. But the other cool thing about what you guys do is, and that I'm glad you're spacing out the album releases, is that you guys are truly a band where I think people buy your albums, put them in, and listen to the whole album, not just a song here or a song there. But I think people really listen to your stuff as complete albums, which I think is just so amazing in, you know, this day and age and the way people consume music.
Yeah, I mean, that's how we write them. And, you know, I think that's how we all listen. I don't think any of us really skip around anyway. We're album listeners, too. And this one in particular, I mean, Tales from the Dead Side, you've got to be ready to strap yourself in for an hour.
Yeah, it's you know, complete passage, one, you know, beginning to end. So it's... You cheat yourself by skipping back and forth between songs.
Yeah. I mean, even like when you guys put out Lesser, I mean, there's definitely certain songs that stand out more than the others, and you kind of want to like, oh, I want to repeat that. But you find yourself going, I know I have to keep going forward. I have to listen to everything. And I really like that about what you guys put out, is that it does make you want to just absorb everything.
In some respects. And I think, like, one thing that I'm not into is like these 13 and 15 song albums that get to me. That's too much. You know, I'm in, like, I think 10 is a nice cutoff where I want, because I want to be able to sit and listen to it in one sitting, you know, and have it be a one experience instead of just like, here's a bunch of songs. You know.
What's interesting about Tower of Souls, and this is kind of, I don't think I've ever had this experience listening to a song, and I've listened to a shitload of songs, is that when that one was done, I was like 5 minutes and 27 seconds. Like, how did they fit all that in 5 minutes? Because, and I'm not usually like a huge long song kind of, like, you never see me at a jam band show ever, because I just would lose my freaking mind. But I just, when that was done, I was honestly like, how did they fit all of that in 5.5 minutes? Because it just... the amount of stuff in there was just incredible.
I think the underlying thing is, I think we all, whether we vocalize it, and quite often we do, but also subconsciously, I think we all think, you know, what if, quote, quote, you know, what if? We don't
limit ourselves. What if we try? You know, we throw it at the wall. If it sticks, fine. If it doesn't, well, what if this, you know, letter B works? And I think, and that holds true certainly in our rehearsal time and our, you know, when we're working up a song. And I think it certainly manifests itself in the way the song, you know, turns out.
Willing to let the song kind of take us on a journey, and, you know, we're not in a rush to get back to the, you know, verse chorus. You know, sometimes it's fun to see where those parts lead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that keeps you engaged too. That's one thing I really like, is that it isn't always that. I mean, you do have some songs like that, but they're kind of interspersed among all these other things where you just don't know where the song is going to move next. And I think that's really nice, and it keeps you engaged in the song the whole way through.
Now, if the other two would just let me do more with the drums, I keep telling them.
There was actually an extra 15 minutes of drum solos, but we cut it from the final mix.
Oh man!
Didn't think it fit with the general aesthetic of Tales from the Dead Side.
Yeah. Oh, contraire.
But I think if you go back and if you look at a lot of the bands that we like from the 70s, you know, certainly there are 80s and even later influences, but the stuff from the 70s, I think we have a lot of common ground on, and that was kind of before metal was fully condensed into like what it is known as now. And a lot of those arrangements, even like Black Sabbath, Deep Purple, Led Zeppelin, were, you know, they were more fluid and not as set in stone, you know.
Right.
So yeah. I think that's a little bit of that 70s influence.
Yeah, and I think you definitely have some of that prog in there as well, some of the King Crimson and stuff creeping in there.
We're used to King Diamond now, but King Crimson's good.
Yes.
We'll take that too.
Fuck yes.
So, of course, I have to ask you, and I know this one is really, like you said, it's really like your first true soup to nuts concept album. So I'm thinking that in the context of that, we're not going to have the traditional one Nina song on there.
I think we kind of do, but it works within the concept.
Oh, yeah.
if you caught our charity track that came out last Halloween, it was called Punk Mambo.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty much the Nina track. I mean, okay. Nina writes, you know, she wrote a good chunk of the lyrics on this record and a good chunk of the vocal melodies, but that's the one that's like, you know, usually, when you say Nina track, that's usually code for the song that's about murder.
Well, yeah, it's like, you know, or Kill That Bitch and Hello Nurse. I mean, those are the classic one Nina track per album.
Yeah, kind of. So I think Punk Mambo qualifies. I think that's the...
I think it does.
Yeah.
All right.
First, it starts off with Gimme a Skull, Gimme a Skull. So that's pretty Nina.
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah, good. Awesome. So, I mean, it just sounds like you guys have just been just straight out and crazy busy. And I know that you guys have had a couple live dates and dispersed in there as well, which is pretty cool. And again, I sit back and I look at what you guys do, and it's amazing what the Sound of Thunder machine just continues to do.
We're amazed ourselves, I think. But it's helped. I mean, it's great to be in a band where we all get along really well. Our producer lives in the area. We've got, you know, rehearsal is like family time. Yeah. And I think we all need this as a release from other aspects of our lives.
Yeah, pretty much. And it's a tremendous comfort zone. I mean, we get behind our instruments, we get with each other, and okay, the flag drops and it's time to rehearse. You know, we will lose ourselves in a few hours just in a snap. And we'll, yeah. You know, and in what Josh said is correct. You know, I think that it takes on a life of its own. I would add to that.
I would say if this band ever breaks up, you will see Chris on national news in some kind of shooting and or road rage event within 3 weeks.
Oh man! But and everything you just said, I think it shows in the music as well. You know, if it definitely shows in the music.
Well, I hope so. I mean, you hear about bands where, you know, everybody travels on a different bus, or, you know, they leave the gig at the end of the night and they give each other the finger and they're not on speaking terms. And like, we meet like smaller regional bands that almost operate like that,
operate
even though
like
they're
that.
Not making any money. It's like, why? So you know, we're very, very lucky, but it's cool. And it's an extended family because how many times have you interviewed us? This is the fourth or fifth one. Mm. This is like the, you know, our friends with websites and podcasts and radio shows. Like, you know, we know you guys. Like, you could come stay at our house if you were in town. It's, you know, it feels like the whole thing's a family at this point. And it's right. Certainly that family is limited to, you know, people on the somewhat, to some degree, on the outside of the big record label industry, because we still can't get any of those people to talk to us, for sure. I suspect, you know, it does feel like we're blacklisted sometimes, and I suspect that, you know, they just sense that we're not going to
comply,
let anybody, you know.
Well, I think ultimately, the way you guys are doing it, big picture, I mean, would you really want to be on a huge label?
No, not at this point.
Yeah. And I totally get too about you guys, you know, being friends and being family and the feeling, because I've been in bands where we've been like a family, and the music that comes out of that, it feels different. It sounds different. And those songs, I can still pick up my guitar and 25, 30 years later, those songs just come right out of my fingers again. And then I've been in other bands where it's been that, pretty much pulling teeth. Yeah, we really don't get along that well. We're just a band. And I have to sit there and think, how the hell did I play that song? Did I even write that song? It is. It's a night and day experience.
Yeah. I mean, this is the advice I give to people in other bands is like, if you don't want that person coming over to your house for dinner, then don't have them in your band. You know, it's not worth it.
Yeah. The other night I brought up the notion of here in Northern Virginia, how many bands that we've been in existence now for about 5 years, and how many bands that we knew 5 years ago that are no longer in existence. And it's quite a few. And I'm sure it's not just this region, it's certainly nationally as well. And, you know, we look at ourselves and go, what's the problem? we don't understand that the problem.
Well, I mean, like, the half-life of a band is basically about 6 months. Is what, if you can get past the first 6 months and everything, you're doing really well. And I say that, you know, with full explicit knowledge that this is the first band that I've been in that's lasted for longer than 6 months. And I've been in that band I've been in more than one of those bands where you have adversarial relationships with your bandmates. And you get a lot more done when you're, you know, not at each other's throats at band practice.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I think it's the same thing, too, you know. Because those bands that were like family, it was like, okay, yeah, we're going to take like a half an hour. Let's just take a break. And we'd all just go sit together, have a beer, laugh. And, you know, so it wasn't like we all went our separate ways for the break. It was like we still hung together, just put the instruments down for a minute and just, you know, right back to it again. It just was always just really tight, really like a family. And, so it's the only way to really be a productive, long-living band.
Yeah, I think you're right. And it's to some extent, it's that same way at gigs with fans, you know. I don't think anybody at this point goes into metal to make money or play to huge crowds. But, you know, you have this small group of dedicated, cool people at shows, and that becomes the same kind of vibe, and it makes those shows worthwhile.
Yeah, when you step off the stage and someone comes up, admittedly, I'm probably the hardest on myself of any of the four of us. When I come off the stage and I play even kind of mediocre, and I have a 14-year-old kid that comes up to me and says, "Hey, man, I really enjoyed it." I mean, I light up right away. "Hey, I'm glad you enjoyed it. Thank you. Thank you for coming." You know, I mean, just like, you know, because I want them to leave with the notion of, hey, ASOT is, they're all right. They're cool. I want to come see this band again.
Right. Definitely. You got to do that. Absolutely.
Chris is in a rush to inspire the next generation because he knows his time's almost.
Oh! That's okay. Josh has more gray hair than me. It's okay.
This is true.
You know, like I said, I'm super psyched. Can't wait to hear this one. And I would urge anybody out there, definitely could go up. Got a little more time left. What, August 17th, right?
Go run through August 17th. Like I said, we really, really appreciate that people are helping out and doing the Kickstarter, but also it's also a better deal. So it's, you know, if you think you're going to get it anyway, you might as well get in on the Kickstarter and get the extra stuff.
Mm-hmm. We're throwing the kitchen sink at you. So
And obviously, if there's anybody listening who hasn't experienced any of A Sound of Thunder yet, and you want to get the back catalog, that you guys have got that really cool full catalog collection up on your website now, which I thought was, that's pretty amazing to have all of that, including one of the singles as well, that I don't even have that damn single. And but that's good. I mean, you can have everything in one shot. And of course, you know, get on Shadow Man and you'll have everything you guys have done so far, at least for the next 6 months.
Yes. there'll be another one. Yeah, that the CD starter pack is our most popular option and also a very clever way to get rid of the 8,000 CDs in my basement.
Awesome. And, you know, and for everyone too, you know, obviously, Josh, I mean, you've been working straight out. And anybody, I hope no one gave you any crap about some of the delays with Raven and stuff when you got sick and stuff, because I'm thinking, yeah, he's probably been working like 26 hours a day. No wonder you got sick. So
yeah, it was a lot of work to get that done. But it was totally worth it, you know, and those guys had some doubt. I have to give SPV credit for backing them up and allowing them to do the Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. But, Kevin Gutierrez, the producer that did Walk Through Fire, you know, wasn't necessarily going to be the producer on this new one. And so it was the Kickstarter fans that allowed Raven to get back with that same team. Walk Through Fire kicked ass, in my opinion. And
Extermination is just amazing.
Yeah, I think what they needed was to get back with Kevin again. And, you know, just like that consistent production, I think it really helps. And you get more comfortable with the producer over time, the more you work with them. And I think it's helped us up our game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think definitely that album was just kind of an epic for those guys. And, you know, stuff like Fire Burns Within and even like that Thunder Down Under track that's on there. I mean, just, I mean, the whole damn thing is solid.
Yeah, so. No, I had Exterminate in my head for a few months there. So, yeah, they knocked it out of the park.
I really appreciate the hell out of you guys taking a little bit of time to talk to us tonight and hopefully, you know, help get the word out and close this thing out with a bang. And we'll be moving on to the next one.
That's right.
Yes, indeed. Thanks for having us.
I'm already in progress.
Yeah, no problem. I you guys are always welcome here, as you know. And I, like I said, Josh, I look back and I thought, holy crap, May 12, 2012 was the first time I talked to you. So I've been talking to you now for like 3 years, every single album, and it's been great. And I've got no intention of stopping if you don't.
Man, we always look forward to talking with you, and that's no bullshit. You're the best interviewer. Maybe cut that part out. I don't know. Depends on the this is always the interview I look forward to the most.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you. And maybe someday I'll actually make it down for a Thunder Chorus session. That'd be a highlight.
Yeah, man, you got to do that.
Cool. All right. Well, I'll let you guys get back to work. I think I'm going to go and take Tower of Souls for another spin and just let that eat into my brain.
Enjoy.
Good stuff.
Enjoy.
Well, guys, Jesse, Josh, Chris, have a good night. And again, I appreciate the hell out of you guys coming on Focus on Metal, and I'm looking forward to hearing the album.
We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Scott.
All right.
See you 6 months, Scott.
All right, later.
Later.
Bye.
There you go, my metal side chat with Josh, Jesse, and Chris from A Sound of Thunder. So if this is your first taste of ASOT, you heard a lot of good stuff throughout the show, little samples from a couple of their different albums. You can see how they've gone along, progressed, gotten pretty damn awesome. And every album, I think they can't get, you know, any more awesome than this. And they come back and they just keep topping themselves. So let's see how far we can push this thing. The way we can do that is you guys help them out. They're an independent band. They depend on the fans and the support of the music community to continue to make great, awesome music for us. So again, go up to Kickstarter.com and look up A Sound of Thunder, Shadow Man, Tales from the Dead Side. Check out what they have on there as far as options of what you can get for your contribution there. Lots of good stuff, plenty of choices. They're really good about that. They're also really good about video updates and all of that all along with the whole process. So if you've never even been involved in a Kickstarter, this is a really good one to start with it. A Sound of Thunder is a band that does a really good job with their campaigns. They're really experienced about it, and they do a great job. And you'll walk away having a great experience having done this one with them and also supported a great band and allowing them to continue and put out great music for all of us. So again, one more time, Kickstarter.com and look up Shadow Man, Tales from the Dead Side. Guarantee you won't be disappointed in this. And, you know, if you're a crowdfunding veteran and you're used to Kickstarter and all that, I just want to let you guys know that Act of Defiance, which is the band that Sean Drover and Chris Broderick put together after leaving Megadeth, they do have a campaign going on Pledge Music, so you might want to check that one out as well. But first and foremost, you know, as we said, you've only got until August 17th to get in on the Kickstarter campaign for A Sound of Thunder, and it's Josh so eloquently put it in the interview, if you're thinking about buying it anyways, why don't you do it on Kickstarter? You end up getting more for your dollar than if you just went out and bought the CD all by itself. And of course, if you are interested in any of the other A Sound of Thunder merch that's available, you know, t-shirts, posters, some great vinyl, beanies, all kinds of good stuff, you can get that on their main website, which is called A Sound of Thunder Band. com. That's definitely a great way to keep updated on the band. You can also follow them on Facebook and follow them on Twitter. Don't care how you do it, I just urge you to do it. So hope you enjoyed this one. Obviously, I never get tired talking to that band. It's always great. It always gets a little bit sketchy when Nina gets on board as well. We tend to go off a little bit, have a lot of fun. She's also a great guest to have on. Didn't have her on this week, but hey, you know, three out of the four people in the band, I'll take that. So we are thinking that maybe we might be taking the next 2 weeks off, as longtime listeners know. Usually we take a couple of weeks off during the year, usually kind of in a 6 months apart thing. And, you know, we're doing this week to week, and sometimes we just need a couple weeks off just to decompress, come back in it as well, and all charged up, ready to go. So we are thinking right now, as the schedule runs, that we will probably be taking off the next 2 weeks. So that'd be the week of the 17th and the week of the 24th, and come back on the week of August 31st, or basically the first week of September. So right now, that's the plan, is that we'll probably drop off for 2 weeks and come back the first week of September with some brand new great episodes for you. And of course, you know, when we're having time off, doesn't necessarily mean we're not doing interviews. We've actually got a couple more scheduled back to back coming up this weekend. And so, you know, still getting content together. Shows we're going to continue to roll on. No intention of stopping the metal freight train that is Focus on Metal. And of course, you know, if you need your metal fix when we're not on for the next 2 weeks, which currently that's the plan, you know, you got other great podcasts to listen to. Of course, our friend Victor with Mars Attacks Guy puts out some great episodes, so if you've never experienced any of Mars Attacks, now's the time to go ahead and check out some of the great stuff that Victor puts together. Again, that is the Mars Attacks podcast. You can also check out Radioactive Metal. That one's a little bit more on the extreme metal side than ours is, but another enjoyable podcast with Snowy and Rock. You're going to love that one. And there's also John over at Iron City Rocks. And then, of course, Brian, who does the Double Stop podcast, definitely want to check out the Double Stop. Great stuff there. And, you know, Mark and John, Talking Metal, they've always got a great thing going on as well. And all the 101 stuff with Mitch LaFon. Of course, Aaron and Chris over at the Decibel Geese podcast. Those guys are an absolute machine putting out shows. A lot of great stuff. Really comparable to what we do over here on Focus on Metal. So definitely, if you like this show, you are absolutely going to like those guys as well. Very much a very comparable show as far as content. So if you never experienced the Decibel Geek podcast, I urge you to check that one out. And of course, there is the 800-pound behemoth that is Wiki Metal right out of Brazil. Great podcast there. And last but certainly not least is my friend Bob Nalbandian. Bob's always putting stuff out. Best way to keep up with Bob and what he's doing in the whole podcast slash show world is probably follow him on Twitter, either at Shockwave Metal or Inside LA Metal. Whenever Bob's got a new show coming on, then he posts that out. He just did one a week ago with Jasmine St. Clair. Anyone doesn't know, she's a huge extreme metal fan, and Bob did a great show with Jasmine, so I would urge you to go and look up that one. I think that everybody out there will enjoy it. So in the meantime, besides listening to a lot of other great podcasts that are out there, you can also keep up with what's going on at focusonmetal.blogspot.com, as well as the main site, focusonmetal.net. Of course, Richie is always working away on Facebook when he's not dealing with Screaming Baby, Screaming Baby. And, you know, I'm always up there on Twitter as well. So there are ways to keep up with us. And like I said, lots of other great stuff that is on the way. And just amazed some of the interviews we've gotten lately. Can't wait to get those on the air for you. So for Richie, for myself, and everybody here at Focus on Metal, have yourselves a great couple of weeks. And we will see you back here in September, unless, of course, changes happen and we end up having to do some shows in the middle. Sometimes we get asked, hey, can you promote this? We really, really want to do it. And then we just go, and we delay the vacation. But right now, like I'll say, have yourself a great couple of metal weeks. And until we talk to you again, remember,
focus on metal.
Everything else is insignificant.
Throw your hands in the air and
you're still here? It's over. Go home.